Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And joining me now, as he does every single Friday, that's Parker Fleming covering the Grizzlies in the NBA draft on his free Substack, Substack Elitist. If you give monetary support to Substack Elitist, make sure you go subscribe first. But if you give monetary support, it all goes to St. Jude because he's a grade A human being. He's on X at Paka underscore Flocka. Parker, happy Friday, brother.
Gabe, it is great to be back on the Grade A Show. I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there, man. I'm doing all right. It's been sort of Memphis Hate Week for ESPN personalities. Kind of strange.
Yeah, it's been strange. The Grizzlies haven't even played in 2 months. Which, granted, they made a very seismic trade, the first seismic trade of the offseason. But like, hey, a really good NBA Finals is going on right now. Maybe go talk about that and go save your network. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll get to the NBA Finals in a minute. But I do want to get back to what we learned on Father's Day, and that's Desmond Bane to the Magic. In return, Grizzlies get KCP, Cole Anthony, 4 unprotected first-round picks, and a pick swap in 2030. How do you feel about this return for the Grizzlies, and what do you think it means, ultimately, for the Grizzlies franchise?
Yeah, I mean, for one, I will say I haven't been sad about a trade or a player getting traded since I was a kid, quite frankly, as far as like, man, this one kind of hurts. Like, obviously, I'm like, oh, yeah, like, appreciated their time here. Like, I'm not trying to say that at all, and I didn't. But with Dez, it was like, shoot, Desmond Bane's not a Memphis Grizzly anymore. But at the same time, you look at that trade package, and, you know, they're not getting back a player as good as Desmond Bane. But, like, hey, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, starting two-guard defensive stopper on teams that won championships this decade with the Denver Nuggets in 2023 and the Los Angeles Lakers in the bubble. And then also, like, Cole Anthony, seismic contract, young point guard. You can try to flip him for something. But the real meat and potatoes – 4 first-round picks and a pick swap. You just cannot turn that down for
right.
Desmond Bane.
You can't.
You can't. So now, like, the thing I've got to, like, when thinking on it and making a read on it, like, if you kind of look back into their history of pursuits that they have made on the trade market, you know, I know there was reports about Franz Wagner and trading up in 2021. You had the Kevin Durant originally when he was with Brooklyn, and you had Mikal Bridges, you had OG Anunoby. It kind of felt like they were trying to bring in somebody else that would either make Dez the 4th guy or a 3A, 3B. And then, you know, in this new CPA, if you're having 3 max level players, you have to be confident that it's a trio you can win a championship with.
Right.
And, you know, with Dez, and like, you know, I still think, like, I thought, like, you know, Josh, Aaron, Dez, they always played well, super well together. They won a lot of games together. And I thought they could have won a championship together, but this also presents them the opportunity to have this, all this flexibility. They have now 10 first round picks, 3 swaps, the 16th pick in this draft, which I still think is a pretty solid pick, even after the depth that was lost from NIL. But also, too, you have this pick in 2026 that is projected to be the worst of a Washington and Phoenix Suns first-round pick. And you're looking at Washington, right? Okay, they're still probably hanging around the bottom of the East next year. Like, this Phoenix Suns team has just not gone well in the Matt Ishbia era. Now they're talking about trading Kevin Durant. And every report that comes out, it's that they're losing more and more leverage each time. And you can all of a sudden stumble yourself into a very, very good asset to give the Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. era another gear that you were kind of losing with these limited assets that the Grizzlies were having at the moment.
All right, now with these newfound assets, with the flexibility, what's the first thing you want to see the Grizzlies do? Whether this offseason, trade deadline, whatever it is, what do you want to see them do immediately?
I mean, obviously on the draft, I mean, getting – if Cedric Howard or Colin Murray-Boyle fell to Memphis, those are like the no-brainer, like go sprint to the podium to go get that guy, trade target or draft target. But what I really want to do is I really want them to use that Cole Anthony contract to go get something.
Right.
To go get a guy that can play a key role in your playoff rotation. And I read the Daily Memphian's Chris Harrington column about the Grizzlies' flexibility this week. And, you know, he's done a really great job with kind of breaking down what the Grizzlies can really do this offseason, because he's very knowledgeable of the CBA and is very open-minded about, you know, what they can do. But with the Cole Anthony contract at $13.1 million, they can bring back a salary that is as high as $20.6 million. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about Cam Johnson. We're talking about Herb Jones. We're talking about P.J. Washington, Denny Avdija, Najee Marshall. Like, getting a guy that can come in and be the starting small forward, that would be awesome. But I mean, the guy that I talked about in my column today, Grizzlies mock offseason, was Nickeil Alexander-Walker, because I've been watching these playoffs the last few years, and obviously he has played big roles for Minnesota back-to-back years for the Western Conference Finals. But also, too, you've seen the kind of guys that have been making these big plays and impacting winning basketball at a high level alongside stars. It's not the big small forward role player. It's the Andrew Nimhards. It's the Aaron Nesmith.
Yes.
It's Alex Caruso, yep. Derek White. That's what Nickeil Alexander-Walker is, too. And I think he has another gear he can go to, you know, not having to be behind Anthony Edwards anymore. And I'm also looking at it, too, where it's like, okay, the Grizzlies lost a lot of ball handling with Desmond Bane. And it's now, right now, as the roster stands, places a lot of pressure on Ja Morant and Scottie Pippen Jr. to create offense. And I think, you know, in a secondary role, Nickeil Alexander-Walker provides that. So, but regardless, this flexibility is very interesting. But the thing that I'm looking to the most is the Cole Anthony contract, because it's no disrespect to Cole Anthony. Fine player. He's young. Maybe he, you know, becomes, you know, that a very impactful player to winning basketball. But he's 6'1", and you're already small. 6'1", 6'2", you're already small with Scottie Pippen Jr. and Ja Morant. I'm trying to use him to go get a guy that can play a massive role for the Grizzlies next season and hopefully in the playoffs.
Yeah. Now, I want to dig in a little deeper on the Nickeil Alexander-Walker sort of deal and what that would look like. Would that have to be a sign-and-trade in all likelihood?
Yes.
Like, that's what we're looking at, a Cole Anthony and a couple of picks, whether they're round two or maybe one round one for Nickeil Alexander-Walker?
Yeah, and, like, frankly, like, it's one of those things, like, Minnesota can't pay him. And, like, so it's almost like, what kind of leverage does Minnesota have? But maybe it's like, hey, there's these other sign-and-trades on the table, whatever. I don't know how it goes. The trade I outlined in my Substack was Cole Anthony getting traded to the Sacramento Kings, because they have a huge trade exception from that three-team Fox Levine trade. And Memphis also has their 2028 second-round draft pick. So they can get that back. And they get a point guard, a young point guard, that they could potentially just see what they have. And then you send another second over to Minnesota, and they ultimately generate a traded player exception for Nickeil Alexander-Walker. And the thing that's advantageous with that is, because of what you can bring in, because of Cole Anthony's contract, you can pay him more than a non-taxpayer mid-level exception. Frankly, like, I think he's worth it. Like, I think if you said, I think the contract I was putting is like 4 years, $66 million, descending by $1 million each year. Mm-hmm. They're starting at $18 million. Like, that's worth it. And it's not going to be a contract that's like, I don't think it ages badly either. I mean, he's a guy, he can handle the ball a little bit. He can play make a little bit. Has shot 38% from three in the last 3 years. He's a guy that you can put on opposing ball handlers at the point of attack and defend 94 feet. Like, this is a no, like, it just, he's the no-brainer guy to go get. Obviously, takes two to tango,
right?
You know, because he's a free agent. He's free to go to other teams. But if it were me in that front office, that's the guy I'd be kind of beating the drum for.
All right. Now, you also highlighted in your column today for Substack Elite is Santi Aldama. He's heading into restricted free agency. I'm sure that he'll get some type of offer sheet out there. But how do you expect this thing to go for the Grizzlies with Santi Aldama? Obviously, they could bring him back, depending on what that offer sheet looks like. They can match. They can, you know, get him back onto the team. But a sign and trade's not off the table. What do you expect the Grizzlies to do with Santi Aldama?
More and more, I more and more each day I become more uncertain about what's going to happen with Santi Aldama. He seemed like it's like, okay, kind of no brainer. You know, we like Zach Kleiman, he said, like, you know, obviously the comment that stands out to everybody from his exit interviews is him saying we're not close. But he also said we have to be more open-minded on what we can do to improve this team. And, you know, when that was said, like, obviously I would have thought, like, okay, maybe if a Kevin Durant, Jaylen Brown opportunity is on the table, maybe Dez is the guy that goes. But, you know, I was thinking, you know, Santi, Brandon Clark, Gigi Jackson, Vince Williams, guys that were probably out of trade talks more often than not. But I am also, like, with a sign-and-trade, I'm like, okay, for one, who do you bring back in a sign-and-trade? But two, the Grizzlies are losing Desmond Bane, and they're probably losing Luke Kennard as well. They're losing a lot of shooting, and we've also seen in the playoffs, I mean, Indiana has made it to the finals almost off of this alone, is role players hitting shots.
Yep.
And Santi Aldama has shot 44% from three in 10 games in his playoff career. He has a good Olympic track record as well. I just think he's not a guy that's going to fall in the moment. And that means something to me for role players. Everybody's looking for playoff risers, and I think Santi Aldama could be that because also, too, I think he hasn't also gotten a chance to show that yet because, for one, we just don't take a whole lot of stock in Olympic basketball for some reason. But two, he hasn't had the opportunity to show that entire leverage games. It's been in the first round. But I mean, hell, in game four, he had 23 points on like 9-13 shooting. Like, this is a guy that's not afraid to take these shots. And he's going to hit these shots as well. And a 7-foot guy that 24 years old, a dribble pass shoot. I know the defensive flaws,
sure,
and all that, but like, you don't find that many players of his skill set on the open market. So if it's up to me, I would be trying to keep him because I think also too, if you get him on a good contract, like granted, I think if it's something like, oh, a team wants to offer him $20 million. Okay. That's rough. All right. Sign and trade stuff because not a lot of teams could pay him $20 million a year, but like at a reasonable contract, he's always going to be a guy that you can put in trades because also too, a team can look up and say, oh, well, if we're trading this guy, like, hey, like Santi Aldama, like he's been doing this over the past several years, but he's been behind Jaren Jackson Jr. Let's see if this is actually like a quasi Jalen Brunson situation going on where it's like he pops to be like this fringe all-star type player when he's given 30 minutes a night, 15 shots a night, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, ultimately,
he's always going to have value.
Yeah, ultimately, what I'm hearing is, regardless of what happens with Santi Aldama, just don't let him walk for free. Find value out of that.
Correct.
Out of having him in restricted free agency, which I fully expect them to do. Now, I want to go ahead and get to the NBA Finals. We're getting our, let's see, fourth game seven in 30 years. The Pacers. I mean, before we were out on Juneteenth, I picked the game on Wednesday, and it just looked like the Pacers were on their last breath. Like, you had Tyrese Halliburton with the calf. Andrew Nembhard had 6 assists to 10 turnovers in the last 3 games. You know, Miles Turner was not playing well. It just felt like they were down and out. Now, obviously, they get home, and they absolutely hammer the Oklahoma City Thunder. 108-91, lowest point total for the Oklahoma City Thunder this year. Jalen Williams was a minus 40. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 8 turnovers. That's the most in his career, playoffs or regular season. These Pacers, you have to see the light leave their eyes. You just do. I mean, this series has been phenomenal, no doubt, but this Pacers team, I can't say enough good things about their resiliency. That's what I think has defined them this entire playoff run.
You know, it's crazy. Like, I had my father-in-law ask me, like, oh, who do you think wins game seven? Like, do you think Pacers can pull it out? I'm like, you know what? This playoffs just kind of showed me that, like, you can't count out the Indiana Pacers. Like, they are, yeah, resilient. And it's one of those things, like, you look up and down their roster. I think we've said this ad nauseum on your show. They're bucking the stereotypes,
yep,
of how to win and play in deep in the playoffs, whether it's shortened rotations or playing at a methodical pace. they are pedal to the floor. They are just like their pace is reminiscent of just like traffic on I-240. Like it's just all gas, no brakes.
Right.
Like, and you know, they're getting contributions up and down, like you know, and like this, like for me, like I'm a draft guy. I've gotten more into it. You know, people have soured on like Jace Richardson because of his measurements, but like, go look at T.J. McConnell.
Right.
In the finals.
Yeah.
Like this 100%. Dude looks like he's getting beers with me, you, and Connor over the weekend, and he's out here just absolutely hooping in the NBA Finals, making big plays, making big shots. I don't want to hear that. But also, too, keep going down. Obi Toppin, been an efficiency monster for them. Andrew Nembhard, becoming one of my favorite role players in the league. You had the Nesmith moments. And obviously, like, Pascal Siakam may win Finals MVP. But even deeper and deeper, like, they're getting Tony Bradley and Ben Shepherd moments in the Finals. Like, you know, anybody before this playoffs were like, oh, yeah, like, they're the Pacers top eight, like, they can only go eight, and I don't know if McConnell can play in this series or in that series, or, oh, hey, like, Ben Shepherd's probably getting phased down. We'll get more Mathurin minutes. Like, no, they're going 10 deep. They're playing at a pace where that resembles, like, January Tuesday night hoops.
Sure.
And it's become a championship formula for them. They are one win away from an NBA championship. I could have never expected this to happen.
Yeah, although you did call them as your sleeper going into the NBA playoffs. You get a pat on the back for that. You get a gold star for that. I'll tell you that right now.
I guess so.
The T.J. McConnell impact, though, like it boggles the mind to see what he's been able to do every single game of this series. I can't stress it enough. Every time he is on the floor, it feels like they're winning minutes.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, he's applying pressure all 94 feet. He's getting steals. He's getting deflections. He's snaking his way to a spot in the mid-range, even though he's not really much of a three-point shooter and he's undersized. Like, he is just, like, identifying all these lanes to get his shots off, like, in the mid-range. And doing his best, like, Beno Udrih impersonation. And it's
a J.J. Barea impersonation. Why not?
Yeah, the J.J. Barea impersonation. It's just one of those things that's it's fun to watch. I remember hearing him on a podcast saying, like, playing hard, like, just saying, like, playing hard is a skill. And he is the dude where it's like, yeah, he might be the smallest on the floor, but he plays harder than anybody else on the floor. And it's been wild to see because, again, it's just kind of bucking these stereotypes because you've always seen over the past several years, you're seeing less and less of these smaller guards come into the league. Like, all these point guards are becoming, like, you know, we're talking about, like, you know, they try to say, is John Morant too small to be the guy that wins an NBA championship?
Right.
I have a different context there, but, like, people are wanting these point guards that are, like, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander size, like 6'5", 6'6", 6'4". And McConnell's out there 6 foot on a good day and making a high level impact at the highest level of basketball that you can possibly watch. And it's been a lot of fun to watch.
All right. Now, I am hesitant to get into all this, but why not? We're in Memphis. There's been some Memphis hate, I feel like, this week, whether it's Jaren Jackson Jr. and Kendrick Perkins calling him overhyped or Stephen A. Smith saying that free agents don't sign in Memphis because of the crime. Let's start with Stephen A. What'd you think of those comments, honestly? I mean, first of all, I want to be clear. Big free agent signings are kind of a farce. They don't really happen unless you're in, like, maybe four or five markets around the NBA. But when you're in a small market, that's the biggest reason that you're not signing free agents. You're in a small market, you're not in a glamour market. To say it's about crime seems completely ridiculous. And he brought up Jimmy Butler's name. I wonder if Jimmy Butler's sitting at home or in Cancun, wherever he is right now, like, why'd you bring my name up? What was the point of that? But Stephen A., going after Memphis and their crime, and it's not lost on me that he is doing the whole political thing. He's in the political realm now, and maybe that's part of his pitch to Americans. by the time we get to 2028? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's layered, and every city has its flaws, so I'm not going to pretend like, where we are is perfect.
Right.
But, like, Memphis is pretty damn good. I've been here for my entire life. I've never once felt like my life was in danger. I've gone to Grizzlies games as a season ticket holder, as a media member, since I was a kid. I've never once felt in danger. 20 years of going to Grizzlies games, never once. I've obviously, I've been a college kid before. I've been a young adult. I've been out on Beale Street. Never felt like my life was in danger. But also, too, Stephen A., what's going on in the news right now? What city is having these massive riots? Los Angeles. Are you going to call that? Are you going to say the players are not going to want to go to the Lakers because it's unsafe? Hey, Stephen A., can you go on a subway in New York City?
Right.
Stephen A., are you going to say the same stuff about Detroit, New Orleans, and San Francisco?
Yeah, Jimmy Butler ends up in San Fran, the name he brought up, and Ricky Pearsall, I keep bringing this up. People are probably tired of me bringing this up, but he was shot last year going to lunch in the chest.
Or was it Brian Robinson?
Yeah, in D.C.
Commanders in D.C. Every place, every big city has issues. But also, guess what? These are the richest of the rich, and almost the richest of the rich in this country. They are not living in those areas where it's dangerous. They are living in the nice, protected neighborhoods. They have the money to where they pay off. They probably pay for security.
Sure.
As well. I don't know, man. It's just Memphis is it's just a very unique, vibrant place. It has its own identity, and we're very protective over this city, and Memphis never come, it's that, 50 Cent meme where it's like, oh, what are they, or Nia, I don't know who it was.
It was 50 Cent, yeah.
50 Cent, yeah,
you say F me for? Yes.
What you say F me for? Memphis doesn't do anything to garner this outside reputation. Obviously, and I think just, you brought up the political realm, and it just makes me think, it just adds more to my take that I just think ESPN and Stephen A. Smith have outgrown each other. Yeah. Stephen A. Smith, he thinks he's bigger than the brand. He thinks he's bigger than the sports he covers. He obviously has his own show. He has his SiriusXM. Just let him go do what he wants. And I don't want to belittle what he's done to get himself to this point, to this stature.
Mostly self-made. I respect the grind and the hustle.
I respect the hell out of it, especially for an industry that it's a lot of former athletes taking over, but at the same time, this ESPN NBA coverage, night and day to NFL, man.
Right.
NFL,
100%.
You can tell that these people love the game. And I think if they can just bring in somebody, NBC and Amazon are man.
Amazon ends up with LeBron James after his career and NBC has Michael Jordan, ESPN better get their S together. They better figure it out.
And then meanwhile, you're paying Stephen A. Smith and Pat McAfee $50 million, that's kind of where I stand. It's very nuanced. It's just one of the things, I love my city. I hate that it's getting such slack. Obviously, Stephen A. got what he wanted with not only a John Morant reaction, but political gain, being able to politic his way into talking to the mayor of Memphis and being able to talk about how to continue building on the momentum that Paul Young had put out in a statement about the lower crime rates, the lower murder rates. But it's just same old Stephen A. Smith, man. That's really all it is.
All right, now same old perk. He calls Jaren Jackson Jr. on the Gills Arena Show the most overhyped player in the NBA. I think that Jaren has flaws. You can have your opinion on him. He doesn't rebound well. He fouls too much. Sometimes I want to see him be more aggressive on the offensive end, game to game on a consistent basis. There are some flaws about Jaren Jackson Jr.'s game. But where's all the hype around Jaren Jackson Jr. to make him overhyped? That's the problem I have with Perk's statement there. Did you sort of view that the same way?
Yeah, you know, there wasn't anybody, like, when he won Defensive Player of the Year, there wasn't anybody where I'm like, oh, wait, that person should have won it instead. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. should have won that Defensive Player of the Year award. Should have been All-Stars when he should have been All-Stars. Frankly, it's one of those things, like, yeah, I think he's, like, his hype comes from, like, you know, hipster NBA Twitter, like,
right.
You know, they're not necessarily.
These aren't people in the biggest platforms. Whenever I hear the biggest platforms on a national scale, I don't really hear Jaren Jackson Jr. being praised, right? I hear constantly he has to step it up, you know, when you're in the playoffs or if he has a nationally televised game where they lose or he struggles. That's what I usually hear on the national scale.
Yeah, and then for me, that wasn't even the biggest problem I had about what Kendrick Perkins said. It was about how everything fell apart because of Dylan Brooks.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
Where, for one, Kendrick Perkins poured honey on a picture of Dylan Brooks on live television for.
And called him a liability, if I'm not mistaken.
He called him, had an entire segment calling him a liability. Or, like, is he talking about Dylan Brooks and the Grizzlies experience the same if Ja Morant never got hurt and suspended, or if Marcus Smart became what they wanted him to be? Probably not. And it's just kind of ridiculous that you had this whole, like, the whole Dylan stuff, the whole coverage on him was really weird from a national scale. It was very weird, and he was a driver in that. Like, and now that Dylan's not with Memphis, and I'm trying to pull, like, the, oh, now that he's not with Memphis, but, like, now that Dylan Brooks is not in Memphis, it's now like, oh, everything fell apart because they lost their swagger of the team with Dylan Brooks, and now he's bringing that swagger over to Houston, and now they're where Memphis. Like, it's stupid.
Yep.
So stupid.
I hear you. Well, Parker, enjoy your weekend, and we will talk next week.
Absolutely. We'll talk next week, and have a good weekend.
Yes, sir. He is Parker Fleming at Paka_Flocka on X. Make sure you go subscribe to Substack. Lead us his free Grizzlies and NBA draft Substack. If you give monetary support, it goes to St. Jude because he's a grade A human being. Now, I want to pick up right where we left off with Parker talking about Kendrick Perkins' statement on Jaren Jackson Jr., saying he's the most overhyped player in the NBA. The Blitz is next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM, ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
Hate on Memphis week continues, Gabe. Kendrick Perkins joined the Gills Arena show and called Jaren Jackson Jr. the most overhyped player in the NBA.
Okay, first of all, I think it's kind of ridiculous to call him overhyped.
Yes.
He's going to be 26 years old. He has a Defensive Player of the Year and 2 All-Star appearances. And he missed out on All-NBA by how many votes? What was it, like 3 to 5? It was barely missed out. I'm not going to sit here and act like Jaren Jackson Jr. is underrated by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's properly rated. I think there's a lot of people that hate on Jaren Jackson Jr. for his flaws. Even in this city, we see that on a consistent basis. He can't rebound very well. He fouls too much. He has flaws as a player. But to say he's overhyped, I don't see anybody, you know, championing Jaren Jackson Jr. outside of the city of Memphis. And even in the city of Memphis, people have things to say about what he doesn't do well instead of focusing on what he does do well.
Right.
But it's just strange to me that you have this take. I mean, Tyrese Halliburton was the most overrated player in the league. According to the Athletic survey, he's proved that wrong for the most part. Whenever we do this, these players have a way of proving people wrong. So I'm hoping that Jaren Jackson Jr. does that with these Perk comments. That's my hope.
Why were they talking about Jaren Jackson Jr.?
I have no idea.
I just don't understand it. Why was he part of the conversation? It doesn't make any sense to me. Jaren Jackson Jr. is an excellent NBA player.
Yes.
Excellent. I don't think that he would have been necessarily worth the amount of money the Supermax he could have gotten, but
sure.
I would have understand why he would have gotten it. Because if you're a Defensive Player of the Year and then you make All NBA, that triggers a Supermax because that means you're one hell of a basketball player. I think that Jaren Jackson Jr. is mostly properly rated. Everybody looks at
right.
him and says he is turning into an offensive weapon that still has flaws. He still needs to be more aggressive. He's got to be better rebounding, and he's got to get those fouls down. A lot of the fouls come off of just him either getting beat and not giving up on the play.
Maybe some frustration.
Or he's got to learn how to set a screen a little bit more. There are areas of his game that he absolutely still needs to work on. That doesn't mean that he's still not one of the better players in the NBA, which he is, especially when you look at his defensive numbers. He is a true game changer on the defensive end. Why? I don't understand why ESPN and their analysts, and really I'm talking about Stephen A. and Kendrick right. Perkins specifically, can't talk about the NBA without being negative about a
right.
player or an organization. Just talk
it.
About basketball.
Perk also
what do you mean he's overhyped?
Perk
in what
also
world is Jared
week,
overhyped?
I believe he was on the Gills Arena show. He said that the Grizzlies just, you know, they haven't been the same since they got rid of Dylan Brooks. They should have never got rid of Dylan Brooks. Well, one, they weren't going to be able to afford him. He got $90 million from the Rockets. Also, you were the same guy who was saying that Dylan Brooks was holding them back when they played that Lakers series.
He quite literally...
He poured honey on a picture.
He called Dylan
Brooks. On a picture of Dylan Brooks.
He called Dylan Brooks a liability.
So
which one is it, Perk?
I mean, I can't keep up with the flip-flopping and the nonsense. But either way, Jaren Jackson Jr. is not overhyped. I don't even think he's hyped. I don't see anybody out there, again, championing on a national level Jaren Jackson Jr. Doesn't happen. It doesn't exist.
I see more negative.
How can somebody be overhyped when they don't get hype in the first place?
I see more negative conversations about Jaren than I see positive ones.
Correct.
For the most part.
100%.
I think people who actually pay attention and watch basketball, they think that Jaren Jackson Jr. is a really good player. He's an all-star player.
Yes.
He's still trying to get to that all-NBA level. But he is improving every single season. Trying to pretend like these young players have to be fully formed drives me insane. We'd never allow players to just have a runway of improvement. He has gotten better every single season.
Yes.
No one is pretending like he is one of the best 10, 15, 20 players in the NBA. Stop. He's not overhyped. Basically, Tyrese Halliburton has proven that he wasn't overrated or overhyped, so they got to find somebody else, and they're like, oh, I guess we're going to talk about Jaren Jackson Jr. now. I'm also going to be honest about it. I think he's probably trying to take a shot at the Grizzlies because he's on ESPN, and ESPN and the Grizzlies and Stephen A. Smith and all that crap that happened this week.
I hope that's not what it is.
I bet it is. I bet it is.
Maybe, but I hope that's not what it is. It's just, it seems kind of ridiculous based on the conversation I see on a daily basis around Jaren Jackson.
Also, Park,
to call him overrated or overhyped.
Park, how many rebounds did you average per game in your career? Do we need to go look at that? Do we need to go look at your numbers?
He averaged.
What's that thing about stones and glass houses?
He averaged 50 claps per game.
Yeah.
That's what Kendrick Perkins did, especially by the end of his
Who
career.
Who said that? Was that Draymond?
Yeah, it was Draymond. Yeah. He said he averaged 62 claps and five cups of Gatorade a game.
Worst person you know says something smart.
Yeah, for sure.
Per Front Office Sports, LeBron James could reportedly eventually join Amazon Prime's NBA coverage. Here's what they wrote. Where there's smoke, there's fire between LeBron James and Amazon. The growing business relationship between the basketball superstar and the nation's largest retailer could lead to King James eventually joining Prime Video's upcoming coverage of the NBA.
Okay, NBC and Amazon Prime are not playing around when it comes to their NBA coverage. And this is my hope. Here's my hope. That LeBron James joins Amazon. You have Michael Jordan on NBC. And ESPN decides to step up their game. Because they're going to have to. Or they're going to get lapped by the other carriers of the NBA. If they continue doing what they're doing right now, they're going to be an embarrassment. No one is going to praise them at all. They have to figure something out. Because Amazon and NBC are serious about their NBA coverage. They have guys that are going to talk positively about the game. And when you look at ESPN, besides maybe inside the NBA, and we'll see what they do to that, they're going to have no redeeming qualities as it stands right now. That's what I see right now. Is that Amazon and NBC care a whole lot more than ESPN about their NBA coverage at this particular moment.
Yeah, my hope is that we are going to see this hot take garbage just end. It needs to be over.
Right.
Talk about the games. This
sure.
whole idea that the only way you can talk about the NBA is through legacy talk, hot takes, negativity. It needs to end. This culture of negativity around the NBA and how it's been covered is exhausting. It's exhausting. It's not factually based in anything. It's all opinionated. My hope is that Michael Jordan, LeBron, and the people that they bring on are going to actually teach people about the game, to
yep.
help them appreciate the
LeBron
game.
LeBron does a good job of that with Steve Nash on Mind the Game, too.
LeBron's done very good on Mind the Game. And to be honest, this week, the quote that he gave about rings and the way people have completely misunderstood what he was trying to say just shows that it is so far off right now. Like, Colin Cowherd's rant about LeBron James was completely nonsensical because he was putting words in his mouth and pretending like LeBron hasn't been saying this for a decade. A decade he's been saying things like that. He didn't just make it up because all of a sudden he realized he couldn't catch Jordan. What even opinion is that? It makes no sense whatsoever. I'm happy that LeBron could potentially join NBA coverage. We need former players and people who are educated in the game, who actually care about the new era and helping. Well, it's
Kendrick Perkins is a former player.
Well, but
the Morris twins are former players.
The Morris twins do a better job than Kendrick Perkins does.
Okay. To a certain extent, sometimes it's kind of way off.
Former players can do well. There are a lot of really good former players out there who talk about the NBA. I don't. It's just ESPN specifically, the culture that ESPN has created is terrible. All of the bad takes and all of the bad conversations mostly come from ESPN because of the culture people like Stephen A. and Kendrick Perkins have created.
How do we feel about LeBron in general? Like, do you think he'll be a captivating guy if he ends up with Amazon? Like, how do we feel about him as like a guy sitting with a crew talking ball?
I think that LeBron and Jordan are going to be very
The idea of both of them.
I think they'll tell
I think
the
they'll
truth.
Both be advocates.
Yes, I do
for
too.
The current players as opposed to even inside the NBA.
Yeah,
inside the NBA we can crap on the current generation.
They do. They still build it up.
They still
Shaq can get iffy sometimes, but I think that Kenny and Charles usually try to build it up, and then when they have guys who fill in on TNT, they're usually positive about the game. Shaq can just be weird because he hears footsteps with his own legacy, and he's worried about his own place.
I don't know why he is either.
The whole big man club thing can get annoying every once in a while. I said it, though, whenever it was announced that Jordan was going to be on TV, I think that Jordan's going to be positive about the new era. I think that Jordan's going to be positive about the NBA. I don't think that he's going to sit there and try to protect his own legacy because his legacy is the most protected legacy in sports history.
And I really hope, and this is just a hope, I don't expect this to happen. I hope that sort of calms down the chasing of Jordan's ghost. Because I think a lot of that is because we don't see him as consistently as we should.
He's a mythical figure.
He's not out in front of a camera. Like, I think you drop down some of that mythical figure when he's in front of a camera covering the NBA and games every week. But my hope is that seeing him more on camera and how he talks about the current generation, hopefully that'll calm down some of the nonsense.
I think Jordan's going to be great. I'm to be honest, I'm way more excited about Jordan than I am LeBron because we hear LeBron talk about the game a lot. Yeah. It's going to be something very similar. He's going to be positive about it. He's going to try to educate people about the game. I don't think he's going to try to do the hot take nonsense. Jordan's going to be fascinating. Fascinating because he is truly one of the smartest players that have ever played. I know we talk about Jordan's physical ability all the time, but he doesn't get enough credit for how smart he was in dissecting defenses. Like, I know LeBron gets a lot of credit for maybe being the smartest player we've ever seen, highest IQ we've ever seen, and I'm not going to argue against that, but I'm excited to see Jordan be able to show that side of him when he's on these TV shows. I'm really fascinated to see how they basically use Michael Jordan, because it sounds like he's not going to be every single game. It's just going to be every once in a while you get Jordan. So I can't wait. I can't wait.
I'm excited for
the game.
I'm excited for it. But ESPN, here's my message to you. Step your game up.
Wisconsin is suing Miami for tampering with DB Xavier Lucas.
So for those that don't know, Wisconsin had an NIL deal in place with Xavier Lucas. Miami supposedly reached out, impermissible contact. He ends up at Miami on a bigger NIL deal. Now the Big Ten has responded to Wisconsin. Go ahead, with this litigation. The Big Ten Conference stands in full support with the University of Wisconsin regarding contractual agreement between student-athlete Xavier Lucas and the Wisconsin football program. As student-athletes become active participants in revenue sharing, it is critical that agreed-to obligations be respected, honored, and enforced. In light of current laws and association rules, information suggesting tampering and contract interference in this case by the University of Miami is very troubling. These actions undermine the efforts of its own conference as the ACC continues to in collaboration with the other A4 conferences and developing a sustainable framework for college sports. This situation is just the latest example of a critical need for substantive governance reform. I'm just going to put it how I have been putting it on the show. This is a tricky situation right here, guys. pay attention to this. While a lot of folks in college football and college athletics are trying to stay away from the employer-employee contract relationship, Wisconsin's lawsuit reads as another company or franchise trying to hire away an employee who's under contract. That's exactly how it reads. It alleges that Miami representatives provided a compensation commitment if Lucas agreed to leave Wisconsin to play for Miami, including financial terms and more lucrative that were more lucrative than theirs. This is going to be a problem for all those people that just want to keep college sports how it was, and you want to make sure that we get all these antitrust exemptions. This reads very closely to professional sports. This is Wisconsin putting their stake in the ground, saying we had a contract with this guy. It makes no sense for anybody else to reach out to him when he's under contract with our school. I want to see how it figures itself out, but I feel like this one is going to linger, and I don't think this is going to be the last of these lawsuits that we see. We see Group of Five players get poached every year using tampering. We see tampering that's completely unmitigated and unregulated. We're going to see more of this as we continue down this road. Now, it's a Friday, so you know what you need to do? Stop by your local liquor store. And when you stop by your local liquor store, don't reach for that national brand you've been reaching for years. Instead, reach for Old Dominic. Do it. They have gin, vodka, toddy, whiskey, and bourbon. They have award-winning selections of whiskey and bourbon. It's the most fresh, most full spirit you can buy in this city is one from Old Dominic, because the distillery is right here on the riverfront. 305 South Front Street is where you can find them. They have events all the time. Make sure you go check those out at olddominic.com. You can ship Old Dominic spirits anywhere in the United States of America. You do that at olddominic.com. And always remember that Old Dominic is the official spirit of the Memphis Grizzlies. Two bar locations inside FedEx Forum. So if you're stopping by for a game, Tigers or Grizzlies, if you see a comedian, a concert, whatever it is, make sure you stop at one of those two bar locations by Old Dominic and grab a craft cocktail made by my good friends at Old Dominic. Old Dominic Distillery. Come say hi. Now we need to wrap up this Friday edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show. We'll do that next right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.